Okay. Here's what it comes down to, guys. I think we have a pact in this yeshiva. And that pact means that on the one hand, we're extremely respectful of your intelligence. We're not dogmatic. We're not black and white. We don't bang our fists and rail against this is evil and that is evil and this is the end of the world. We try to be subtle and sophisticated and honest and intelligent and real. And that means that you have to bring honesty and openness. Because if you don't reconsider yourself, then essentially the respect that we're affording you is working against you. So then you never move. Then you're just, and that's really the danger of the yeshiva. Right? Since we're not dogmatic and aggressive, so are you really going to change whom you are and transition and grow? So forget the Super Bowl. That's really the pact in this yeshiva. That you can trust us not to abuse your trust and not to say things that are one-sided or offensive or aggressive. And that trust should hopefully make you open and say, well, how should I behave? What should I be doing? Rather than, well, now I'm free. No one's telling me what to do, so I'll do whatever I want and I'll make whatever choices I want to make. And so it's a good time to think about whether you're upholding that trust of yeshiva, whether you're upholding that part of it. Are you asking questions? Are you exploring? Are you interested in, am I doing the right thing? Is this what's expected of me? And in a general sense, because we're not going to shape you into a container. And the Super Bowl is a perfect example of that. I'm not going to bang my fist on the table and say, you can't watch the Super Bowl, and it's Talmud, it's Dreif, and it's a Vodazar. I think that's inappropriate. And it's not reflective of the way we try to educate you. And quite frankly, it's not helpful. You walk out of this room laughing. But I do think it's a great opportunity for you to explore some really important issues and to explore them honestly and honestly to yourself. And the two issues that I think are great to explore is primarily your whole relationship with sports. Secondarily, what it means to be here in yeshiva this year beyond sports. I think that it's a good crossroads for a gut check for two issues. One is what type of life you'll conduct and what type of relationship you'll conduct with sports. The Gemara says in Megillah that the Jews were punished in the days of Achashverosh because they partook or they participated in Achashverosh's Suda. Yet the Medrash says that the food was glatt kosher, so what was wrong about participating in Suda's Achashverosh? The answer is cultural association. That was a 180-day orgy with endless gorging on food and regurgitating the food, and it was just morally offensive. Who footed the bill for that 180-day party? Probably the poor people across Achashverosh's kingdom, so there was a social inequality upon which the party was premised and predicated. And sometimes it's not just about the experiences, but it's about the emotional investment and emotional submission. Are you experiencing something, or are you essentially selling your soul and committing your identity and transferring your identity? And I think that's really a good question to ask about sports. It's a good way to start the whole conversation. I watch sports very avidly before yeshiva, and I continue to watch sports. I watch it less avidly now, quite frankly, less interested. But I'll never forget my first game that I attended after yeshiva. I went to a Mets game, and Mets were actually pretty good those days in the 80s. And Rusty Staub hit a home run. I don't know if you've probably, I think he's an announcer now. And all of a sudden, 50,000 people around me got up and started clapping furiously and screaming. And quite honestly, I just couldn't. Because that man was no longer my hero. And I just felt so odd getting up and clapping for him. Because my heroes were now Rav Lichtenstein and the Rav and the Rambam. And these were the people I deeply identified with, that I wanted to be like, that I wanted to shape my life like. I just felt so odd. I was watching, but I just couldn't invest the same degree of emotion. I enjoyed watching the game, the drama, the personal interaction, the stress, whatever, all the aspects of sports we all enjoy watching, the teamwork. But they had abdicated that position of admiration and adulation in my heart. I no longer saw them that way. The beautiful Medrash that says that Am Yisrael Shebechutzaretz Ovde Avoda Zara Bitahara. It's a very, very peculiar phrase. Ovde Avoda Zara Bitahara. What does that mean? Avoda Zara is Tame. Avoda Zara is Tame Bemasa. It's one of the most extreme tumas. If you touch it, if you carry Avoda Zara on your shoulders, you're Tame, even if you don't touch it, even if you just bear the weight. Because it's compared to an Isha Nida. It means that even when you're not worshipping Avoda Zara proper, there's an emotional tax. And you're coming into contact with, again, today, obviously, the lines between Chutzlarts and Eretz Yisrael, misrespect are still blurred. There's also sports accessibility here. It's not just if you live in Chutzlarts, but I mean, just think about the last period that you all finished and that you didn't have to listen to Christmas carols and nothing wrong about the Christmas carols and the trees, but just how there's been a different feel for the end of December and that cultural, I don't call it barrage because that demonizes it, and there's nothing demonizing about that, but that whole cultural encounter you bypassed this year. You lived in a different framework and a different seal in a different environment. I think to a degree that's healthy for you. So that's something to think about. And sports today in general is not just the event, but there's a whole culture surrounding it. And that culture reaches a frenzy on this Yom HaGadol V'Hanorah of Super Bowl Sunday with 24 hours of programming, even more than that. What are people really interested in over the weekend? The commercials. And it's a very accurate microcosm of this very interesting marriage between sports and culture, between sports and its ability through culture to capture your mind, your frame of reference. And why should I buy a bar of soap that costs $2 more, which has the same chemical? Because my hero is using the bar of soap, and I identify with that sports hero. And if he pitches the bar of soap or the food or the car or the insurance or whatever they're pitching, so because I want to be like that sports hero of mine, then I'll pay extra money. I'll actually waste my funds imagining myself living vicariously that lifestyle because I'm... But it's not just sports. It's all vicarious. When I see a Volvo commercial and I see the mother bringing her children home from soccer match, stopping off at the ice cream parlor and taking... So if I want that type of lifestyle, I'll purchase a Volvo because I can imagine myself rather than say, I want that lifestyle, I'll get married, have children, take them to soccer matches and ice cream, whether I drive a Volvo or I drive a Chevrolet. So all of merchandising is creating, to a degree, fantasy, vicarious experience that we're willing to pay money for just to reinforce, hopefully, reinforce lifestyles we're trying to achieve, but sometimes lifestyles we're not achieving, but to create a simulation or an unrealistic reality or augmented reality. So the truth is you can really appreciate how much sports controls your mind, not so much in the Super Bowl, but in what's going to happen in a month from now. Now it's around February 1st, more or less. There's a lot of hype around the Super Bowl. The hype will continue around the weekend and a week later. But then around March 1st, the entire sports merchandising industry finds itself in crisis. Because catchers and pitchers haven't yet reported to camp, so baseball is yet to get underway. The NBA is still slogging through its 80-game schedule, so no one really cares. Ask the Warriors, they don't really care about these games. So how are we going to capture people's interest? Golf? How much golf can you watch? NASCAR? It's just riding around in the same circles. So once every 4 years, the Winter Olympics. Nope. But at a certain point, all the toboggans look similar. And all the slaloms seem pretty similar. So I'm going to be interested in whether the East German slalomer had 0.3 seconds less from someone who paid keen attention to the Olympics when I was a kid. Like at a certain point, what was I doing? Watching another slalom and another long-distance ski race? So someone has to flip the switch. So middling exec in CBS walks into a room. There's a little button there. It's a big red button. And he just presses the button. And on that button is written the words, March Madness. Oh, March Madness. Now it's time for everyone to be engaged and hypnotized by teams they barely know anything about. You can imagine you follow the Yankees. I'm not a Yankee fan. Right? You follow the Yankees the entire season and their drama and the injuries and the relationships between the players and the coach and the veterans who are trying to have one last guess and the rookies who are trying to... There's a lot of drama. It's a human interest story. Can it? Tell me honestly, guys. How many players on the Gonzaga team can you name? Does anyone know where Gonzaga is? The Chachmei Gonzaga? But all of a sudden, every office across America is obsessed with Gonzaga. And whether Gus Johnson will call this way or that way. And it's a really good reflective, really good mirror as to, wow, I don't care about these teams, but because the world around me, the culture is demanding that I watch, and I'm watching, and I'm staying up late, and I'm ruining my schedule. So I think there are these flashpoints where you can try to become someone who enjoys sports, and there's a lot to draw from sports. I remember, just to be fair and even-handed, Tova Lichtenstein told me at Rav Lichtenstein Shiva, She looked at me in the eye and said, please, whatever they do, make sure they don't whitewash my husband's legacy and make you think he didn't like sports. He loved sports. And she told me what about sports Rav Aaron appreciated, and it resonated very deeply with him, the teamwork, time management, selflessness. You all know the fabled story of Rav Lichtenstein playing basketball with someone who was cherry-picking and wasn't coming back on defense. And Rav Aaron turned to him and said, you're playing immorally. Never knew you could play basketball morally. But evidently, there's a morality you can draw from sports. So enjoy it and watch it. It's a nice diversion. But it's this admiration and emotional investment. And I always joke. You've heard me joke about this before. Sometimes I'm rubbed the wrong way when I see people wearing a Rodriguez shirt or a James shirt, because I feel that may be passing the boundary. Why would you want to cloak your identity with their identity? It's real identity shifting. And why would you want to put that type of shirt? I the joke they did it last year in Purim. Wear a Soloveitchik on your back. Wear a Lichtenstein on your back. Wear a name on your back. So I'm sure Purim, someone this year is going to get a t-shirt with Soloveitchik on the back, or Tarragon, whatever. I get it every year. Every year I take it on the chin for this, but whatever. I'd rather take it on the chin and make the point. And it's amazing to me to see people who are erstwhile affiliated with Torah. Sometimes I see yeshivas-looking people walking around with, you know, sports apparel and sports swag with the name, and I say, this is off. Because even though you're keeping every mitzvah, you're paying a heavy price culturally. And of course, sports is a great opportunity to look beyond sports. What other moments are you so deeply affiliated with the culture that you're paying too heavy an emotional price? So I wanted to hold up a mirror for you, and to see the difference between what I hope will be temperate, healthy, and balanced, enjoying sports, to maybe the people that you can become if you're not careful. So now you're all invited to look at this scene. This is a scene, I think, from a rain delay of a New York Mets game about 20 years ago, maybe 15 years ago. And just take a scan of some of the people and their reaction to the hoagie smoking, beer or champagne holding high school dropout in his pajamas. I don't know if he's a high school dropout, but that's just you know, a pot shot, but it's a fair pot shot. So if you're looking to the person, let's say around 2 o'clock on the clock, he's literally suffering a heart attack. I think they're gonna have to call in the ambulances, because he has seen God. This is his Har Sinai. I mean, I think he's having literal heart failure. Somewhere around 11 o'clock is Gandhi, simply crushing the person beneath him just to touch the gods of Mount Olympus. Of course, you've got the guy at 9 o'clock trying desperately to get his 2000-era flip phone to take a picture of this great apparition. Believe me, guys, I was there. It wasn't always so easy. It's like press buttons and this button and that button. It never really worked when you needed it to. You've got the guy around 12:30 who I think is pretty sloshed by this point. Can't imagine he would pass the straight line test. And please, please, no one try to tell me, no one try to deny that the guys at 1 and 2 o'clock aren't really why you guys with their baseball hats. I mean, come on. The wiry glasses, the baseball hats, I mean, they just stepped out of sheer. And the Tzad HaShava Shebeinehem, just look at the way they're looking at this person. It's just a horror. Such admiration, such adulation. For what? What has this person accomplished? It's a ball over the wall. I'll take anything. I'm sure he's a nice person and morally upright. Who's your hero in life? There's a person who's just crushing others just to touch and to be in physical contact with. So it's just a nice opportunity to say, you know what? I want to watch sports, but I want to watch it from a distance. It's a poor word, from a distance, because just watch it by maintaining my own autonomy, who I am. And I'm not, I remember a couple of years ago, I was invited to a shul to speak on Arab Super Bowl. And I said, you know what, tomorrow night, here's my recommendation. And the Super Bowl is starting 6:35, whenever the kickoff was. 6:35, sit down for 10 minutes in Lintar. And start watching the Super Bowl 10 minutes late. Just so. Just because you can stick it to mass culture and say, I'm not going to be enslaved or tyrannized by the fact that I must watch at 6:35. I'm going to watch what I choose to watch. Remember in the early 90s, I was a big Knicks fan, and I was a young married person. I always, the Knicks had these, I hate to hate to say it, Kobe, but they had these terrible rivalries with the Bulls, and they always lost, and they're always on Sunday, and I always make sure I stayed in the base matters until the third quarter. I went back for the third quarter and I watched a little bit. Just, I wasn't going to be enslaved because everyone started watching at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock. I was going to watch at my own pace. I was going to watch when I remember the Super Bowl of 1981. It was the Bengals and the 49ers. And the Bengals were driving, or 49ers were driving, and 9 o'clock came and I got up and I took my brother and said, "We're going to Myra for the Minion." People were shocked in the room. "What do you mean Myra? It's a Super Bowl. What do you mean Myra? It's a Super Bowl." First of all, it was great for my Myrav habits because I stood above the Super Bowl pressure. Truth is, I remember that Super Bowl more deeply, having suppressed my interest and having expressed it. I remember someone once asked Rav Aaron. Rav Aaron was in Ovel when Rav Moshe Lichtenstein got married. And it's a very interesting story because Rav Aaron is a tremendous machmir, and especially with Avelis. Very often your people are Avelim, they come to a wedding and they'll serve some food and that'll be their excuse to come. Avraham was a very big machmir in general, and Ben Avelis, he was extreme. But he went to Shlomo Zalman looking for a heter to dance or to attend his own son's wedding. And Shlomo Zalman did not give him a heter, so Avraham skipped Rav Moshe's wedding. I was at Rav Moshe's wedding, he skipped the wedding. I think someone once asked him about that, and I remember his language as if he said it yesterday. He was in this room. He says, "I remember the love I felt for my son having repressed it more deeply than I would have recalled it having expressed it." I mean, just because you repress an emotion doesn't mean you don't remember the experience. Sometimes, ironically, you remember more deeply. How many Super Bowls have taken place since 1981? Can I tell you those Super Bowls? Not really, but that Super Bowl I remember because there's something that day more important than watching 11 men kill each other. And it was standing up and going to Marav that day and making sure that my Marav habits remained intact. So that's really, again, I hope this isn't, it's not demagogic and it's not simplification and it's not binary and black and white, but it's a really good chance. So like, you're now 18, you're 19. Sports is a major part of our lives. How will my relationship with sports unfold? Those of you who are very, very engaged in sports, and this is a great chance to. Second issue, and it's also an important issue, is you say in davening in that parak in Tehillim, Memchas Shi, Shifti Beveis Hashem, Kol Yemechaya, Lachzot Benom Hashem, Ulevakar Beicholo. Do you mean it? At some point, if this world could stop, would you want to be in the Beis Hashem every minute? And hopefully now, you're at that stage where at least you can start thinking. I would have said that pasuk and given you the Shivisi challenge 6 months ago, you would have said, "What does that mean, Rabbi? We're here for our year. It's our gap year. It's not the real part of life." But now, even if you're not craving that, at least you can imagine what that world would be like. If I put a pill on the table and say, "You take this pill, you want to spend every minute in the Beis Hashem," that pill doesn't seem as weird anymore. Because you really like being in the Beis Hashem. And, okay, there's a world out there, and that world needs us and demands our presence and demands our investment. But be honest with yourself. If the world could stop on a dime and perfect itself, then you'd have no place to be. No college, no army, no medicine. It'd just be you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu trying to understand Hashem's will. But that's not the world you'll live in. But you are living that world for a year. For a year, there's no pressure. For a year, there's no diversions. There's no responsibilities, no obligations. So part of the challenge for this year beyond the Super Bowl is how much of my life can I funnel towards Beis Hashem? Now you have to keep living, you have to keep eating, you have to keep exercising, you have to keep friendships, you have to keep cultural affiliation, you have to remember there was once a Rosh Yeshiva who was appalled that Rav Lichtenstein let the boys receive time in Newsweek magazine in Yeshiva. And Rav Aaron said, "What do you mean? I need time in Newsweek, and I think it's healthy for my students to keep abreast of whatever political..." Those days we didn't have internet, so we had time in Newsweek, so... You can't let your own personal development retard while your religious growth spikes, because then there's a discrepancy between whom you are religiously and whom you are personally, and then there's nothing for religion to adhere to. And that's why you see people coming to yeshiva and losing it all after yeshiva. But if you're really honest with yourself, and this is your year to simulate what you'd like life to be like in some other reality, if the world didn't need you and the world wasn't as distracting, if I could just shape the world the way I'd like to see it, I'd shape it as a Beis Hashem. When I say that pasuk Shivisi Hashem, I mean it. I'd rather be in the Beis Hashem than any other place. Then maybe live it by forgoing something which during the rest of your life may be appropriate, but maybe for this 1 year, When I say forgo it, of course you can watch highlights and maybe even watch the game, but it's a question of, and here I'm trying to become a little more practical, like staying up at night and ruining your Seder just to watch it live. I'm not sure if that's the right note to hit. And don't be naive. I've been through this too many times. Don't delude yourself. You're going to pay a price. Well, I'll make up the time. I'll be in Seder. Okay, so if you don't pay it for it on Monday, you pay for it on Tuesday. You pay for it on Tuesday, pay for it on Wednesday. And again, I just want to let you know, about 10 years ago, just to let you know, we're not being dogmatic about it. 10 years ago, we used to screen the Super Bowl. Before there was internet, before we would get a video recording and sell them at a cable TV, and we'd screen it during the break. There's nothing wrong with watching it. It was just to the degree that it's going to come at the cost of your learning and the cost of your davening, and just you'll embed yourself and immerse yourself in that frenzy of cultural excitement. And this is your year. You have to remember, and remember we talked about on Yom Kippur, I showed you that letter that Rav Aaron would circulate, that Yom Kippur is a special day, and even experiences that are normal and typical under normal socializing and talking and trivializing and hanging out. Just said, daven, go back to your room, come back and daven, think about a Kodesh Baruch Hu 24 hours a day. So it's not Yom Kippur this year, but it has that little bit of that feel to try to create an experience that you're not going to be able to taste your whole life, maybe this one year taste it. So we're not checking. We're not kidnapping you to a lot. I know some yeshivas kidnap all the kids to a lot to make sure. Come on, you're adults. We trust you to be adults. Remember the pact I spoke about before. That's really the most important takeaway from this conversation, the pact. The pact is we don't infantilize the experience. We don't speak down to you. We don't rail against things in black and white. Be careful that you are open to change and interested in our ideas, because if not, then that is victimizing you rather than helping you. Because then basically you're here looking in from the outside, studying the exhibit of Yeshiva Har Etzion rather than going through the transformative experience and what about me should change and can change and how can I change and how can I be better. It's a really, really important pact, and this is a great application of that pact. No one cares. We're not going to sit there and trace you and Chas V'Shalom, it's so off to the Yeshiva. And I hope this conversation has been scaled properly. It's just a really good moment for you to check something long-term, your relationship with sports, and something short-term is how you see yourself in yeshiva. It's far, far past the midway point. Like, what does it mean to be in yeshiva, and how do I structure this year? So just enjoy it. No one's, especially, and it's all accessible to you. I'm sure many of you will watch the game. Some of you don't want to watch the game. I'm proud to say that I have a dollar waged on the Patriots. We generally do not allow betting in yeshiva, not for halachic reasons, but for totally, totally social reasons. It gets out of hand. The people don't have money, so please, this is just a public announcement. Please help us create a healthy social environment here. No one should be involved in large-scale bracketology during March Madness. It's just unfair. People spend money they don't have. They borrow money, have and have nots. It's totally nothing to do with religion, everything to do with your developmental health. If I were running a prep school for Christians, I'd do the same thing. Nothing to do with betting on halacha. It's unhealthy to create an environment people